Death and the Dancing Footman by Niall Marsh. Dramatized for radio by Alan Downer. With Nigel Graham as Chief Detective Inspector Roderick Alleyne, Lawrence Payne as Jonathan Royal, and Stephen Pacey as Aubrey Mandrake. Death and the Dancing Footman.
Yes, my dear.
Do switch off the wireless. I'm painting the rector's lower lip, and all that gloom is making his mouth droop at the corner.
Ah, sorry, Troy.
Yes, I think I've heard enough, and if the rector doesn't mind. Right then. Just look at that snow. We won't be able to stir from the house in this, that's if it keeps up.
It's an ill wind. You said you wanted a quiet holiday.
I'm afraid it will keep up. The sky looks full of it. Oh, Troy, I'm so sorry.
That's all right, Rector. The portrait's finished.
Oh, is it? May I look?
Please do.
Oh, my word.
Do you like it?
It's quite splendid. And most flattering.
Roddy?
Hmm? Oh, yes, I like it very much. Hello, what's that?
What's what?
The car struggling outside in the church lane.
Really? Oh, good heavens. Whoever it is must have taken leave of his senses. They've cleared the lane as far as the first turning. After that, it's thick snow.
Look, it stopped at your gate, Rector.
Oh, dearly.
Man's got out.
He's coming this way.
Well, it can't be for me anyway. Nobody knows I'm here.
He's in a great hurry, whoever he is.
The car's driven away.
Oh, he's seen us. He's coming towards this window. Excuse me, I'd better let him in, I suppose.
What is going on? Oh, it's that playwright, Roddy. Aubrey Mandrake. You remember?
Oh, the chap with the gammy leg. Yes, so it is.
He looks worried. There must be something wrong.
Alleyne, thank God you're here.
Mandrake.
Mrs. Alleyne.
Hello.
Rector, I'm Aubrey Mandrake. How do you do?
Indeed.
Look, I'm so sorry to disturb you like this.
Not at all.
We've just driven over from Highford.
Ah, you're staying with Jonathan Royal.
Yes, he's giving a weekend party. And I'm afraid everything's gone wrong.
Wrong? How?
There's been the most appalling tragedy. Alleyne, we've come to ask for your help.
You detestable young man. How did you know I was here?
Word gets round quickly in these parts. You know how it is.
Only too well.
It's a case of murder.
Oh.
What?
Murder? Oh, dear. But who?
You may know the Compline family, Rector.
Oh, they live over at Penfelton. Yes, it's a little outside my parish, but it's not Mrs. Compline, surely. Oh, she's a most kind and generous lady.
No, it's one of her sons.
Oh.
But now she's desperately ill. She's taken an overdose of Veronal. Alleyne, if we don't get back to Highfold quickly...
Mandrake, it's really none of my business. You must telephone the chief constable.
We've tried. The wire's over Cloudy folded down.
And with your permission, Rector, I'll try from here.
I'm afraid you won't get through. Great Chipping's miles to the north and...
I'll get through even if I have to wade to Great Chipping.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Alleyne. I can see he's not very happy about all this.
Not really. He was hoping for a quiet week's holiday.
I'm afraid there simply wasn't anything else we could do.
He'll do his stuff, I expect, if asked by the local police. CI people don't, as a rule, just nip in and take a case wherever they happen to be.
Operator.
Red tape. Murderers can ramp about country houses. Women can take overdoses of Veronal.
Oh, poor Mrs. Compline.
I drive through snow and ice to bring help and effect and arrest, and then at the last, everything gets bogged down in red tape.
Oh, I doubt if it'll be quite as bad as that.
Well, then give me Whitehall 1212.
If you'll excuse me, I'll pack my husband's bag.
You think he'll come?
Oh, yes. He'll come.
Extension 369, please, and quickly.
Oh, my dear Mr. Mandrake, please forgive me. Sit down. You must be exhausted.
Thank you. The roads are a nightmare. We've been driving since breakfast.
A drink?
Oh, whiskey, please, if you have it.
Oh, of course. And you must stay for lunch.
Oh, you're very kind, Rector, but there simply isn't time. Miss Wynne will be returning shortly from the chemist's. We were given a list of items to get for Mrs. Compline. All very urgently needed.
Miss Wynne?
Yes, another of Jonathan Royal's house guests. She very pluckily accompanied me on the journey over. She and James Bewling, one of the gardeners at Highfold.
Oh, yes.
He came in case we had to dig ourselves out. Fortunately, his services were not required. The roads are just about passable, so far. No sign of it letting up, though.
Packed lunches then for four, eh? You can eat them in the car. Oh, your whiskey.
Oh, thank you. Most kind.
Okay. Goodbye.
Elaine, what news?
I couldn't get through to Great Chipping, as you predicted. I've spoken to Scotland Yard, and they'll get hold of a doctor, commandeer a car, and ginger up a road-clearing gang. And my colleague, Inspector Fox, will come up by train.
Excellent.
Also, I've rung my atrocious superior, and he's all for my taking over the case, blast his eyes. So, there's nothing for it but to go. At least I've got my camera. I'll phone the local chemist for iodine and whatnot.
Well, he can give it to Clarice. Miss Wynne, if she's still there.
Ah, yes, why not? I'll phone through straight away.
I've thrown some things into a bag for you, Roddy. Pajamas, dressing gown, shaving things.
Good. And can you let me have a soft brush and some scissors and some bits of charcoal?
Of course. I'll look them out for you.
The rest, I'll have to trust Brer Fox and co. getting through by train.
Well, swathe yourselves in sweaters and topcoats. Looks like the snow's getting heavier.
It's a bit slippery, I'm afraid. The car tends to slide about, even with the chains.
It's much worse than on the way over.
What are the prospects, Bewling?
She'll be fair enough as far as village and a good piece below. That's when she do turn in and up, if you take my meaning, sir.
Yes.
This hamper looks inviting. Anybody hungry?
No, not at the moment.
No, thank you.
All right. In that case, we'll open it at our first breakdown. If the others overhear me saying that, I dare say they won't let us have a breakdown so that they can collar the lunch.
The others, Miss Whit?
Yes. Well, you know, they're the ones that leave nails and broken glass in the road.
And they hide
things when you're in a hurry. They've only got one arm and one leg each, so they take single gloves and stockings.
Oh, my God, Clarice, are you being whimsical?
You pretend not to be interested, Aubrey, but you, being a writer, I bet they take the top of your fountain pen often enough. And I bet they even get into Scotland Yard, eh, Mr. Oh,
do they not indeed? Listen, Mandrake.
Yes, you want the details, don't you? Poor chap, embarking on all this without knowing the full facts. Goes far beyond the call of duty.
Policeman's lot, etc., etc.
Quite. Well, I'll start at the beginning.
Yes, do.
Jonathan Royal.
A millionaire?
Yes. He's a friend, sort of. And he invited me to his house for the weekend and asked me, if possible, to arrive on Thursday evening in advance of his other guests. I got there at about 5:30. Royal was waiting for me in the library.
Mr. Mandrake, sir?
Come in, Aubrey. Come in.
Jonathan.
Oh, what an incredible night. Harpies and warlocks abroad. Most stimulating.
There's a gale blowing down from the north.
And it's tossed your hair into elf locks. Or did you do that yourself?
I had the driving window down.
You look like a character out of one of your own plays.
Oh, God.
You always say that when somebody talks about your writing. Does it imply modesty or desperate aesthetic power?
Oh, I don't know about that.
No matter. I cannot allow your muse to claim you this evening, because for tonight, yes, and for tomorrow and the next day, I shall be the creator and you the audience.
What are you plotting?
Oh, yes. Plotting, that's the word. My dear, I am up to the ears in conspiracy. Draw up a chair to the fire and I'll tell you all about it.
Very well.
Would you say, I wonder, that I have a sense of the dramatic?
It depends what you mean by dramatic.
I maintain that I have. In the ordinary, unclassy sense. But you see in me, my dear Aubrey, the unsatisfied and inarticulate artist. Temperament and no art, that's me. Or so I thought until I got my idea.
Your idea?
It suddenly came to me. I'm a ninny with ink and paper and brush and canvas and all the rest of it, but there's one medium I've never tried.
And what could that wonderful medium be?
Flesh and blood.
What?
Flesh and blood.
Don't tell me you're going in for social welfare.
Wait a bit. It came to me that human beings could, with a little judicious arrangement, be as carefully composed as the figures in a picture. One had only to confine them within the boundaries of a suitable canvas, and they would take on some sort of form. It seemed to me that, given the limitations of an imposed stage, some of my acquaintances would at once begin to act out an exciting drama.
And?
I decided that all I had to do was select the right ingredients, set my palette with human colors, and the picture would paint itself. I would summon my characters to the theater of my own house, and the drama would unfold.
I wish I knew what you were up to.
Oh, my dear fellow, I'm telling you. I have invited for this weekend 7 suitably selected characters. 7 characters with a sort of emotional, intellectual tension. An antagonism running like a connecting thread between them. Local people from my own corner of Dorset. Oh. And since I must have an audience, I've invited an 8th guest. Yourself.
If you expect me to break into a paean of enraptured gratitude, Jonathan,
Not just yet, perhaps. Let me first make you happily familiar with a dramatis personae. And to that end, I propose we ring for a sherry. You look a little anxious.
Then my looks do scant justice to my feelings. I'm terrified.
Oh, you may have good cause. You shall judge of that when I've finished. The first characters to make their unconscious entrances on our stage are the mother and 2 sons. Mrs. Sunderer Compline, William and Nicholas Compline. The lady is a widow and lives at Penfelton, a charming house just outside Cloudyfold Village. The Complines are an old Dorset family and have been neighbours of ours for many generations. Her husband was my contemporary.
How did he die?
Used to hunt. Came a cropper, fell off his horse and broke his neck.
Oh.
Compline was a rackety, handsome fellow, more popular with the women than the men. But he had his own set in London, and a very fast set it was. Don't know where he met Sandra, but I'm afraid it was an ill-omened encounter for her. Poor thing. I suppose he fell in love with her looks. She was a very pretty creature then.
Go on.
When they'd been married about 8 years and had these 2 sons, Sandra wearied of the kind of treatment she'd had to put up with from her husband and went to stay abroad. And I suppose with the idea of winning him back, she had something done to her face.
What sort of something?
Plastic surgery.
My God.
And 20 years ago, they weren't so good at it as they are nowadays. Anyway, the chap she consulted bolstered her face up with wax. And the wax slipped. Disastrous. This left her looking quite lopsided, with a sort of comical look.
Awful.
For a long time, she wouldn't go out, or receive anyone, even attempted suicide.
Poor woman.
Yes. Ah, Caper, we'll take sherry now, please.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and Caper.
Sir?
Mr. Nicholas Compline is definitely coming tomorrow. He may have the blue room. Tell Mrs. Poulting, will you?
Yes, sir. Excuse me, sir. That makes 8 guests for the weekend?
Yes. Mrs. Compline, Mr. Nicholas and Mr. William Compline, Dr. Francis Hart, Madame Lisa, Miss Wynne, Lady Hersey Amblington, and, of course, Mr. Mandrake. 8. Mr. Mandrake tonight and the rest for dinner tomorrow. We'll have the Heitzig 28 and the Courvoisier.
Very good, sir.
You do take sherry, Aubrey, don't you?
Please.
Yeah, do 2 sherries, Caper.
Yes.
I'm particularly anxious about the dinner tomorrow, Caper. There must be a feeling of festivity, of anticipation. Large fires in the bedroom. I've ordered flowers, something quite extra. I've told Mrs. Poulting, but your department. Ginger up the new footman. And the maids, you know what I mean?
Certainly, sir. I'm sure everything will be quite satisfactory.
Good,
sir.
Good.
The sherry is...
Yeah, thank you, Caper.
Thank you.
That'll be all for now.
Thank you, sir.
Your very good health.
And yours.
Well, let's go on.
Yes.
Sandra was left, as I said, with 2 small sons, William and Nicholas.
Right.
And gradually she seemed to take heart. Life at Penfelton returned to normal. William, the elder boy, was a quiet sort of chap. Plain. Oh, humdrum fellow. He was described once, quite aptly, I thought, as an unsuccessful drawing of a fine subject. He's a bit of an enigma. Devoted to his mother. Watches over her like an old nanny. As a boy of 7, he was found by his nurse in a hysterical frenzy when his mother returned home after her operation. Remarkable in such a really rather commonplace boy. Oh, he's just odd. Nothing wrong, of course, really. But he's done very well so far in this war. But I sometimes wonder...
You don't like him, do you?
Oh, rubbish. He's merely rather difficult to describe, that's all. But Nicholas. Nicholas is his father all over again. Damned good-looking young blade. Charm, gaiety, dash, all the rest of it. Complete egoist. Bit of a showman, born with an eye for a lovely lady. He's, 29 now, and William's 32.
All right.
William's home on leave at the moment. Lead, as they say, rush straight home to mother. Nicholas uses Penfelton like a hotel, and his mother is the proprietor. Consequently, he's her favourite. She spoilt him from the day he was born. If she could cut William out of the entail, I promise you she'd do it. But she can do nothing. So William comes in for the whole packet, and Nick must fend for himself.
Do they get on well, the brothers?
Oh, well, they haven't met for some time.
Ah.
William's regiment's been at the front. Nick, having been declared delicate by his mother, has been wangled some departmental job in Great Chipping. Wears a uniform. Looks damn smart in it. But no, they don't get on well. Remember the necessary element of antagonism, Aubrey.
Mm.
William is engaged to Nick's ex-fiancée.
Ah, well done, William.
Which brings me to the next of my characters, the ingenue, in fact. Miss Cloris Wynne, one of the white-haired kind.
Platinum blonde.
Oh, the colour of light chablis, and done up in plaster like sausages. She will arrive with William and his mamma, who detests her.
And Nicholas scorned her.
Yeah, it isn't quite like that. Being in the habit of having his cake and eating it, he did not allow his engagement to cramp his style as an accomplished philanderer. In fact, he continued to philander with the fifth of our characters, Madame Lissa.
Good God.
Precisely. More in sorrow than in anger, it seems, Miss Cloris broke off the engagement, and after an interval so short, one suspects she acted on the ricochet, she accepted William, who had previously courted her and been cut out by his brother.
Oh, goodness.
Now, my private opinion, what's more, is that when William returns to the front, Nicholas is quite capable of recapturing the young lady, and I think she and William both know it. Relations, therefore, are strange.
Yes.
And I need not tell you that Mrs. Compline, William, and his betrothed do not know that I have invited Nicholas, nor does he know that I have invited them. He does know, however, that I have invited Madame Lissa, which is why he has accepted.
Yes, tell me about her.
Oh, ambiguous, alluring, markedly a dasher, dark auburn hair, magnolia complexion, and eyes.
Mm.
Oh. Austrian originally and naturalized. A beauty specialist. She was among the earliest of our refugees. She has established a salon at Great Chipping, which did not please my distant cousin, Lady Hersey Amblington, who is also something of a beauty specialist.
And who I take it will also be arriving tomorrow evening.
Of course.
And the two are, of course, in competition.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Mm.
Not that Hersey has fewer customers now. They are simply not quite so smart. She refers to Madame Lissa as the pirate.
Really?
You haven't met Hersey?
No.
A distant cousin of mine, of whom I'm rather fond. A courageous and capable creature with her own somewhat direct methods of warfare. She is an old friend of the Complines and not at all delighted by Nicholas's attention to her rival. So she is linked up in an extremely satisfactory manner to both sides.
Hmm. And number 7?
Dr. Hart, the heavy of our play. of Viennese extraction, though now also a naturalized Briton. He has been observed leaving Madame Lissa's flat at the most compromising hour, his hat drawn over his face.
I see.
He has also been observed to scowl most formidably at the mention of Nicholas Compline.
And he's a doctor?
A beauty specialist par excellence. The male of the species. Haven't you guessed Aubrey Dr. Hart's exact profession?
No.
He is a plastic surgeon.
I've always gauged Royal to be eccentric, but that was a lunatic thing to do.
And so I told him. I said, you've invited stark murder into your house.
Prophetic.
Yes, as things turned out.
What I don't understand is why did they all stay? They were free to leave the stage.
Jonathan's a wonderful host. I suppose we decided to make the best of it. And then, of course, the snow...
I still can't see what he was trying to achieve.
He hoped the weekend would go some distance towards burying a little armory of hatchets.
Low gear, Dowser. This be deep bottom.
I know it is.
Ah, that's better. Twill be slushed out long, I reckon.
If we stick...
If we stick, Cloris, they can damn well produce a farm animal to lug us out the far side.
Yes, but...
It's dogging us, does it, miss? For a tidy 10 year and more, my old brother and me have been telling master as how he did ought to put a digging
oh,
little
yes,
old bridge
yes,
across
yes,
that
fine.
There bottom, sir.
Yes.
It's all right, my dear. Just a little skid.
No. Pull over to your right, sir, by this here Pendleton corner, or us will sink to our axles.
I'm doing my best. The wheels won't grip.
You're doing fine, sir. Now, do you keep to the right and rush her up?
I'm in a blasted pothole or something.
Keep her going, sir, keep her going.
Damn you, come up. No.
Oh, we've stopped.
No. Oh,
let me out, sir, let me out. You can leave it to me, and don't stop engine for Glock's sake. Oh, shan't be a minute. Don't you stare. I'll see.
What's he doing, Elaine?
Well, I can only see his stern. He seems to be stuffing something under the back wheel.
Thank heaven he came with us.
I've never responded in the smallest degree to rustic charm, and James Bewling seems to me an extremely unconvincing piece of the genre.
Oh, don't be beastly about him. He's very kind.
What does he mean by those ridiculous gestures?
I see. He wants us to go on.
Ah.
Oh, we're moving. He's done it.
Well, he can get in here.
Here he comes. Get in, James.
You all right, James?
Right as a trivet. I put a little bit of old sacket under the wheel.
I think we'll have lunch. I said we would after the first breakdown. The others can do without.
Right, since we seem to be safely on the move again, continue your story, Mantle.
Yes, of course. Well, on the Friday morning, Jonathan telephoned the Complines and invited them and Cloris to 4 o'clock tea.
So you're a playwright, Mr. Mandrake?
A poetic dramatist would be more accurate, William. A surrealist, even. Author of Saxophone in Tarleton, in which I was fortunate to invest a modest sum of money.
Which has reaped you but modest returns.
Indeed. Aubrey writes of sin and the occult, and most successfully, too.
I saw one of your plays, Mr. Mandrake.
Oh, God.
I'm surprised you got it past the Lord Chamberlain.
Well, the Lord Chamberlain doesn't know whether it's my dirty mind or his, so he says nothing. what do you do, Mr. Compline? I mean, what did you do before the war?
William has Penfelton to look after in peacetime.
Ah.
I paint pictures.
I see.
With very thick oil paint.
My younger son, Nicholas, is a soldier too. He did not, unfortunately, pass his medical for active service. It was a very bitter blow to him. You are not in khaki, Mr. Mandrake?
Aubrey is disabled, Sandra.
I see. My son Nicholas longs to be with his regiment in France, but...
Captain Nicholas Complain.
What?
Yes. Didn't you know, William? Nick's to be one of our party.
Jonathan, how kind of you to invite me.
It's good of you to come.
Mother?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's lovely to see you. You're looking absolutely radiant. I had no idea you were going to be here.
Hello, dear.
A pleasant surprise for you, Nicholas. And here are two more.
William? Clarice?
Hello there.
Hello. And how are you, William?
I'm well. Thank you.
Quite a family party.
How is life at Great Chipping?
Quite unbearable.
Are you still conducting the war?
Tea, Nicholas?
Please.
Oh, you must look after yourself, Nicholas. You know you've never been strong.
Yes, always delicate, wasn't he, Mother? That's why he had tutors and I was sent away to school.
Is your pool fit for bathing, Jonathan?
Yes, why? It's not exactly bathing weather.
Oh, I was thinking of a dip before breakfast tomorrow. Care to come for a nice bracing plunge with me, Clarice?
No, thank you, Nick.
It would have been awkward for you if Clarice had said yes.
Not at all.
I'll bet £10 that nothing on earth would have got you into that water before or after breakfast.
Would you? I'll take you. You've lost.
Nonsense, William. I won't have it. Jonathan, please forbid these stupid boys to go on with this nonsense.
Me, my dear Sandra, I wouldn't dream of saying a word. Nicholas, you must help yourself to milk and sugar.
Jonathan, tell me, who would be your other guests?
Let me think. Lady Hersey Amblington, whom you know. Madame Lissa, whom you also know. I believe Nicholas knows her well.
Yes, we have met.
And a business colleague of hers, a Dr. Hart. I'm told he's quite charming. You'll meet them all later, cocktails. Dr. Hart hails originally from Vienna, I believe, and at times can be seen wearing a rather extravagant cloak.
Oh, I'd love him.
Well, Mr. Mandrake, and have you and Jonathan planned this party together?
No. It's entirely Jonathan's.
Then he's played a trick on all of us.
Well,
do you know, if I painted his picture, I should make him egg-shaped with quite a merry smile and a scorpion round his head.
Oh, dear.
And for eyes, the sort of windows you can't see through, clouded glass. His eyes are quite black, impenetrable.
It's his thick glasses.
No, is that it? I expect he's told you about Nicholas and Cloris and me.
Yes.
And about Nicholas and Madame Lissa?
That too.
Well, if Jonathan, or Nicholas for that matter, imagine I'm going to lose my temper, they're wrong.
I'm sure. If Jonathan has any ulterior motive, it's to effect a reconciliation.
Oh, no. That wouldn't be at all amusing. But I shan't do anything to Nicholas. Let him cool his ardour tomorrow in the swimming pool. After all, I've won. I've got Cloris, haven't I?
Poor William. Another sandwich, Aubrey? Or must you keep both hands on that steering wheel?
No, I think I can manage, thank you. It's not too bad just here where it's straight.
Now, this year, be Pengidling. We're halfway there, but what's that over yet? A nasty stretch you'll be round down there hill.
Yes, good.
Oh, yes.
So the party got off to a promising start.
If William's judgment was right, yes. And Royal's only aim was to make mischief.
Yes, of course it was.
Well, things were soon to get worse. When Madame Lissa arrived, Nicholas clearly decided to brazen it out and took up a proprietary position behind her.
And Dr. Hart?
Glared at them both.
He's quite a hateful man, with eyes like a lizard. I disliked him intensely at first sight.
Anyway, on his arrival, he had presented Jonathan with a Tyrolean cloak, the twin of the one he was wearing. For two pins, I think he'd have taken it back.
And Lady Hersey?
Took one look at Madame Lissa and turned scarlet.
Oh, you noticed.
I'm not quite blind, Aubrey, nor yet half as silly as you think. And they sniped at each other all through dinner.
The surprising thing, though, well, surprising at the time, was Dr. Hart's reaction to Mrs. Compline.
And hers to him.
How do you mean?
He couldn't take his eyes off her.
And she seemed to shrink inside herself and spoke only when she was spoken to.
And then only in monosyllables. Later, of course, one understood why.
Well, why?
Well, it transpired that Hart, then Dr. Franz Hartz of Vienna, had been the surgeon who had performed the operation on her face. She had been known to him as Mrs. Nicholas, but there's no doubt he recognized her. And though it was 25 years on, she knew him.
What happened after dinner?
Well, over coffee, Jonathan became unusually loquacious, even for him, and launched into some dissertation about the nature of the individual.